You are listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, superhosts, Anime and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com, check out our website at geekworldradio.com, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio. So before we get started today, just wanted to let you guys know about a little contest that we're having. It's not much of a big contest, but the prize is pretty awesome.
Yes.
So we are actually going to be giving out some tickets to the Phoenix Comic Con that's happening at the end of this month, May 27th to 30th at the Phoenix Convention Center. So all that you have to do is send us an email with the geekiest thing you've ever done. You know what? If you can make up a story, we're okay with that as long as it's funny.
Yes.
And we're going to choose the funniest one, and I believe that we should have two tickets for that person. So send us an email, and if you won, we'll get back to you to get your name and the name of the person you'll be bringing, and we'll set that all up for you. So don't forget to send an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com with the geekiest thing you've ever done. But now let's get started on the show.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited for this show this week.
Well, you should be. This show is all about the ladies.
Oh, a little something for the honeys.
Uh-huh. So last week was our Joss Whedon show.
Yes.
And so after talking about, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the character of Faith and...
Is that even confirmed yet that he's actually directing the Avengers?
You know, it's still unconfirmed. But at the same time, ever since the rumor of him directing came out, there hasn't been a single other rumor of anyone else directing.
Yeah.
Nor has there been anything that says that, oh, looks like it all fell through.
Totally.
Which, you know, with Joss Whedon's luck, as we've seen with the Wonder Woman movie and some other things, that tends to happen pretty quickly when you know. But we're still hopeful there. So I think
it's going to happen. I think that the choice of Kenneth Branagh directing the Thor and also Jon Favreau directing Iron Man, I think they're definitely going to have Joss Whedon direct it.
Yeah. I think Joss Whedon, first off, would be great, but he also has that great relationship with Marvel, especially, you know, with doing the X-Men comic book.
Yeah.
It really built up his relationship with the company of Marvel.
Totally. So. And I never mentioned last show, by the way, that awesome fight at the end of Serenity between Chiwetel Ejiofor and Captain Mal there was totally awesome. But
it's not about the mending.
No.
Today is about the women. Today is about female superheroes and female just heroes in general, and how there's kind of a lack of them in the entertainment industry right now, and what we can do to help that, I think, you know.
Yeah, and if there isn't a lack there, if there isn't a dearth, there's quite a dearth of not so great role models out there. So we're going to be talking about all the ladies. We're talking about Buffy, and, you know, Buffy's one of the great all-time female superheroes, though not a comic book first. Obviously, she's a comic book now, and we just saw from then, you know, what is it? Like, what is it? Yes, what is it?
I'm sorry, what is what?
I don't really know, actually, where I was going with that. I was hoping you would kind of pick it up there somewhere.
I didn't.
What is it? What's that all about?
I'm not really sure what you're talking about,
no,
so I don't know how to answer.
Let's just move on. So what should we talk about first, do you think? You want to talk about some of the good role models, some of the not so good, some history of women in comic books, in the media, in super heroine-esque type deals?
Let's actually go with the role models.
Yes.
Let's talk about, you know, let's just talk about superhero female role models and how, you know, like I was saying before, there really is a lack of good female role models for girls, unless your role model is, you know, living in the kitchen and doing nothing but, you know, serving your man.
And who what girl's role model would that not be? You know, I'm going to try not to be sexist this show, though I'll probably fail miserably.
Yeah.
But I'll do my best not to be, you know.
Okay, well, you know, at least you're trying.
Yes, exactly.
So
that's all you can really ask.
So let's actually start off. Let's talk about Buffy and what makes her such a good role model.
Well, Buffy is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. That was it. That's what makes her a good role model. Now, you know, the thing about Buffy, which is so great, is the fact that, you know, she's not a one-sided character.
Mm-hmm.
She's able to have depth. You know, she was able to make decisions that were always heroic, but also she would sometimes kind of fall into, you know, just an average person's kind of mistakes, and even sometimes like an average girl's sort of mistakes.
Yeah. A lot of what makes a character like Buffy so great is that, you know, yes, aspects of her are written like a girl. You know, they are written to be a teenage girl. But
all of her heroics aren't written with any sort of sex in mind.
Right.
They're written in the same way that a male superhero would have been written.
Totally.
And because of that, you know, it shows that, you know, girls can be superheroes, and you don't have to do anything special to make them superheroes.
Yeah, totally. You know, I think Buffy's just one of these great characters. You know, Joss Whedon said that he was very inspired by the Kitty Pryde character in X-Men, mm-hmm. who was like the kind of a younger student at the Xavier Institute who was very kind of bubbly and very cool. And he also was very inspired by the fact that he loved old horror movies and the fact that, you know, it would always be like the little blonde who would get attacked by a vampire
right.
and like be the victim. And, you know, he wanted to create, you know, the other side of that, the exact opposite. And I think, you know, Buffy's a really great character because I think she's one of the few female heroes out there that guys also like.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, it's sort of like, you know, even though sometimes they might not actually, admit to it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine there were a bunch of guys that would be like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm watching that Vampire Slayer show.
Yeah.
You know, well, like, you won't actually ever say the word Buffy.
It's funny because a good friend of mine that I have, I think, you know, part of the reason we became such good friends is we were both man enough to actually admit the fact that we liked Buffy
uh-huh.
and Angel. And, you know, it's funny because it's one of these great shows that at first you hear Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and if you haven't seen the movie, you're sort of like, okay, this sounds awesome. But then, you know, you watch it, especially the TV series, and you realize, you know, it's some of the best written TV of all time.
Oh, you were being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, because you know.
Yeah, I know. It's just I couldn't tell.
You know, I gotta tell you. You know, this is gonna be an interesting show because I'm gonna talk about kind of my perspective as a guy, kind of, you know, growing up and sort of like, you know, we're gonna talk about, you know, when I used to play Street Fighter 2 and none of my friends would be Chun-Li except for like one person.
And he'd kick all your butts.
Exactly. And you know, this is the kind of preconceived notions from the male side of the whole thing of you know, super chicks.
Well, there's a big problem out there for a lot of girls. A lot of girls, we don't have very many heroic role models to look up to. You know, I mean, in a way, it's kind of good because then it leaves you with, you know, real world people to try and look up to.
Yeah.
But
like Bella.
Yeah, that's first off, not a real world person. Second off, one of the worst possible role models of all time.
Well, she's like, I guess I meant, you know, not really. You mean like non-fictional? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that if you want to find fictional superheroes for females to look up to, it's really difficult to find. And it leaves us at this point where it's like, well, I guess we're looking in the real world, the actual human beings for our role models, which isn't exactly a bad thing.
No.
But you know, as any of you as kids who looked up to Batman or Superman or, you know, those were your heroes as kids, girls want that too.
Yes.
You know? And while Wonder Woman makes for a great, you know, a great role model, everyone doesn't connect to Wonder Woman, and everyone doesn't want to have the exact same hero role model.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, you brought up Spider-Man and Batman, and really, especially in the beginning of comic books, your choices were basically either Wonder Woman, who kind of stood alone, or, you know, Batwoman,
yeah.
Batgirl,
yeah.
Spider-Girl, yeah, Spider-Woman.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Wonder Woman, sure, she was sort of conceived as a counterpart to Superman, but she was made as an entirely different character. The things that she did and the things that she had were very different from Superman. She wasn't from Krypton. She,
mm-hmm.
you know, Kryptonite didn't hurt her. She had, you know, she had her lasso and her bracelets and those things, those were her tools. And she, you know, granted she was about as strong as Superman, but aside
yeah.
from that, she was a counterpart to him, but she wasn't Superman.
Yeah.
Batgirl was just, oh, let's see how much money we can make off this Batman name. Hey, here's a chick.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny because, you know, Wonder Woman was not the first female superhero.
No.
That was, of course, Hawkgirl.
Mm-hmm.
Though what's interesting about Hawkgirl is the fact that, you know, she was kind of the first of a long line of, like we said before, Hawkgirl, Spider-Woman, these female characters that are sort of like the opposite of another male superhero.
Yeah.
Obviously, Hawkman being that for Hawkgirl. And it wasn't until about 2 years later when Wonder Woman came out.
Yeah.
And she was sort of like the big sort of like, wow, maybe, you know, they can have this strong female character who doesn't need a man.
Now, at least with Hawkgirl, it's a little different than the Batgirls and all that, because those were purely made to capitalize off the name. Whereas
yes.
Hawkgirl, they completely intertwined the stories of Hawkman and Hawkgirl so that they were utterly connected. You know what I mean? They were completely connected and eternally, you know, eternally connected.
Totally. So. You know, it's funny because in a way it seems a little sexist, I think, to have it's almost like to be a female superhero, you need to be a counterpoint to an already established male superhero.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. There's two sides. First side is, you know, comic books especially, they're always looking for different audiences, just like any medium. And so, you know, that was part of it, just trying to get a female audience. And, you know, aside from that, I totally forgot what I was going to say.
Were you going to go about the sidekicks, or was it?
No. I totally completely got thrown off there. I completely hate when that happens.
Were you distracting yourself?
Yes, I got completely distracted. Well, I didn't mean to do it on purpose. It just kind of happened.
I gotcha.
So, you know, these things sort of happen. But it was a really good point. It was.
Well, that's...
And, you know, you should definitely,
that's,
you know...
That's good that you had a good point.
Yeah,
anyway, so as I was saying, that it was really hard for girls to find these... to find someone to look up to that was another girl that was a hero that, you know, that they could see that was doing super things that they could wish they could be, you know? And Buffy came in and said, hey, I'm just a normal girl, but... I've got these powers, and I can do all this stuff, and in fact, I can save the boys.
Yes.
You know? And it made it okay for a girl to save the boys, and it made it okay for girls to watch that, and it made it okay for boys to watch that and totally be with her.
Yeah.
You know, the character of Xander in Buffy is a sidekick.
Yes,
he is,
very much.
Whereas Willow is also a sidekick, but she's also got the brains and eventually becomes a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Xander is constantly the sidekick and just a sidekick, and he's this male character, and everyone is cool with that. You know, it's totally okay, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, you know, he's Xander. You know, the Zeppo, definitely. He's he was definitely a good choice. I think that Joss wrote a lot of Xander like himself, growing up in high school. You know, kind of the geek guy.
Yeah.
And he's a really good way to have it because, you know, you don't want a sort of alpha male, sort of, you know, contemporary type heroic guy to be, you know, the friend of Buffy because, you know, that could take away sort of what the point of Buffy is, which is that, you know, this person you don't see normally as a hero can be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, later on they brought in, or not later on, but in the same season they brought in Angel, but he was sort of a whole different, you know.
Yeah, he's a whole different animal.
Yeah, exactly. And, and I just, you know, I thought Buffy was definitely one of the first, like, major female characters that I became a huge fan of.
Well, she wasn't one of the first great female role models in sci-fi, but she was one of the first, one of the big superheroes of our time that really inspired a lot of people. From our childhoods, though, I mean, there was Ripley from Alien.
Yes.
And Ripley, again, it's one of those situations where the character wasn't written for a female.
Uh-huh.
It was written as a hero.
Yes.
And Sigourney Weaver happened to be the absolute best person to play the part.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the role was really changed any in order to accommodate, oh, it's a girl, we have to make her care about her makeup now. You know what I mean? There was no, oh, I've got to get my purse before I can go to this alien.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny, too, because Ripley, you know, she's this awesome character, and she was written for a man. And, you know, it's funny when you look at, like, different sci-fi. Like, I can't help but think of Uhura, you know, in Star Trek, with, like, you know, the way the skirts and the way they dressed everyone in the original Star Trek.
Well, the irony of it is that we saw the original Star Trek pilot where everybody dressed in pants, the male, female, whatever. There wasn't separate uniforms for the male and female roles.
Yeah,
and number one, Majel Barrett was wearing pants.
Exactly, Majel Barrett was the second in command, and she was wearing pants. Exactly, and. You know, Ripley was the same way, and it's sort of funny that in the most heroic moment that she has in the movie, which is the end when she takes care of the alien, it sort of becomes that sort of that moment when you see her in her underwear, when you see, you know, the kind of... It's funny how, you know, it kind of got turned on its head where normally, you know, that would be what you'd get from the female in a sci-fi movie, you know, for most of it.
Yeah, and she's running around the entire thing in her underwear.
Exactly.
For some reason, she can't get to a room with pants.
Exactly, yeah. I just need a pair of pants. You know, because, you know... Alien is one of these really great horror, you know, sci-fi movies. I can never say that word correctly, can I? Horror.
Not really. We need to come up horror. With another word
yeah.
for you.
Oh,
yeah.
Scary
or we
movie.
Need to come up with, like, some sort of bad accent
horror.
That you can do.
Yeah,
yeah,
I should
yeah
do
that's
the
every time
yeah, okay.
you say
I'll
it
I'll have to
like
do
that.
The Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. La horror. La horror.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, there we go. That's
so,
it.
You know, Alien's one of these great movies that mixes sci-fi with horror. And I think... And it's funny that, you know, that it ends up like that, that, you know, she's finally, but she's not objectified, obviously, at this point, because she's the one who survived, and this is really the best way for her to survive and slip into space, as I recall. But it really is aliens that makes Ripley, like, the real hero.
And also ends with a humongous, I guess you could call it a chick fight, right?
Yes, a huge cat fight, gigantic one, yeah. And you know, James Cameron, of course, directed Aliens, and not only do we get that one cool, you know, Lady Commando there, but Ripley, you know, really became the hero. Not only did she run in and save the girl and take down all the aliens, but, you know, that big moment when she takes the mech suit and is fighting the Queen Mother. You know, it's just all these really great moments that really solidified her is pretty much the greatest kind of female sci-fi icon.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the other great things about her character is kind of happens when she's running around in underwear.
Yeah.
Because what it shows is that she is, you know, she is so much of the hero that it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
That she's in her underwear, but whatever, it doesn't sexualize her, really.
Yes.
It doesn't take away from how heroic she is. And that's actually one of the really interesting things about hero costumes, and that's come under a lot of controversy lately, is, you know, there's a lot of religious people and a lot of, you know, these ultra-feminist that see it as, oh, it's a revealing outfit, and so all it does is sexualize. Well, the reality is that a revealing outfit, if it's worn properly, doesn't sexualize the person.
Right.
It actually shows that they are stronger, because they can wear this outfit and they can show off their skin, and their skin doesn't take anything away from how heroic they are.
Yeah.
It doesn't make them less heroic. It doesn't make them anything less than what they are. It says, I'm here, and if you have a problem with my skin, that's you, and that's your problem, and I'm not the one with the problem. I'm the one that's just a girl. I'm the one standing here and about to save your butt.
Oh, man. That was like a Gwen Stefani moment with I'm Just a Girl. You know, take that, feminism.
Yeah.
That was from a girl's point of view.
Honestly.
Or a woman's. I'm sorry.
Seriously.
I didn't mean to be sexist like that.
No, I honestly have a big problem with a lot of the idea of forcing girls to cover up, because...
Me too.
Because just... under the premise that, oh, if you're not covered up, all it is a man sexualizing you. Well, the reality is that a woman who's truly in charge of her own sexuality would be totally fine wearing, you know, wearing some of these skimpy superhero outfits, not because, oh, men will leer at me. It's because... Why can men run around without shirts on and it like doesn't matter to anyone? Why can't I? You know, why do I have to cover myself up? I should be proud of my body, proud of my strength, proud of my womanhood.
First off, I hope everyone takes what you're saying literally, and there's just a whole rove of gang of women running around shirtless.
I am totally up for a parade of caped naked people.
Oh, yeah, sure, why not? Let's go nuts. Maybe one of those photographers who takes, you know, the pictures in Central Park with all the naked people.
I call for Comic-Con to have Naked Day.
That could go horribly awry. All I was thinking about was you know, the comic book guy in that episode of Simpsons where the Mensa people took over and he wanted to make the poem far a reality.
You know what though? At least then, like a lot of like the chubby bodies, a lot of them have enough roles that it covers most of their private parts.
You know, I gotta say the thing about Comic-Con is, you know, along with the booth babes, and yes, along with the booth babes, you know, there are often actually probably the prettiest of the girls of all the conventions, as well as the anime convention.
Anime Expo was great.
At Long Beach, which we were really impressed by.
Because those anime costumes are freaking awesome.
Have I been sexist yet?
No, not really.
Okay, I'm working on it.
Well, because the point is, we're talking about the power of naked women.
The power of naked women. I think, you know, every naked girl I've ever seen in person, I just said, you're so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I've given them that, like, you know, like I've just been like, wow. Yeah, I didn't give them the power. They took the power, you know? And I was just like, I respect that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, it wasn't sexual. It was just, you know, I respect your naked.
Exactly. I think, you know, it's just fantastic that someone could express themselves like that, really. It's just... awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry. I started thinking about something completely different.
I'm sorry, did you have a point or did you distract yourself again?
I distracted myself again, yes. I'm very distracted today. Well, you know, I just got all this stuff in my head today because, you know, this is one of those really funny shows. It's almost like, you know, why are you doing a woman show, you know? And it's funny because it seems like...
Because I'm
know,
a woman.
Half of the... Well, yeah, well, yes. But half of the population is women, you know? It should seem like... It almost seems like a weird category to have. It's like having a man show. But the whole point is, you know, especially as we've done research, is the fact that there really aren't a lot of really good, positive female, like, you know, characters.
Well, there's also this idea that every woman wants to see Sex in the City.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, but there are plenty of women out there that hate that kind of movie, that hate the romantic comedies. I mean... You've seen Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yes, I
and
have.
I haven't.
Yes.
You know, it's like, I have no interest in that kind of movie. I have an interest in action movies, and I'm not the only one. You know, it's funny, as we were doing our research, like you said, we found that there were very few female superheroes or really big supervillains in that, for that matter, to really look at. But... You know, there's plenty of romantic comedies and plenty of, you know, and there's plenty of male heroes and male supervillains. It's it really starts to bother you when you think about how little action is really geared for females, you
yes.
know, is stars a female or whatever. And it's not, and really, no matter what you want to tell us, it's not because nobody wants to see them. Like I was saying, when I was doing my research, I was looking all over the net, and there was forums upon forums of girls going, why aren't there more movies for us?
Yeah.
And then guys going, well, because no guys will go see them. And it's like, well, there are plenty of shows and plenty of movies that at this point that have disproven that point, that men and women won't both go see, you know, these action movies. And I mean, even Dark Knight, how well Dark Knight did shows that it's not just men that go to see these movies, and it's not just men that go to see them multiple times. I think that you have a list of some of the bigger TV shows and movies, some of the ones that did really well that kind of disprove the point that women, you know, that women heroes aren't going to.
Well, it's funny. I have a list, but I don't have it anymore. I ripped it out, but I can do it off the top of my head. But first, you know, let me state, like you were saying,
was that on the page with your poem?
Yes, exactly. It was a beautiful poem, and I don't know why you wouldn't let me read it.
Uh-huh.
You know, to go along, I think, you know, when you're saying that people say that, you know, the films aren't profitable, people, you know, cite things like Elektra. People cite things like that horrible Halle Berry movie, Catwoman.
You're right. They cite things that are written terribly.
Yeah, and Elektra is worse than Daredevil.
Well, you know what's awful? That then people go in and say, well, you just can't write female superheroes.
Yeah.
That's their argument for that. Like,
know,
when you say that... When people say, oh, well, you know, Elektra did awful, and you go, well, that's because it was written terribly. The argument back is, well, it's impossible to write for a female hero.
Yeah, and which is obviously, you know, completely false. We were talking about things like, you know, TV we're about to talk about, which is rampant with female, you know, superheroes. But also, there are other movies that have franchises based on female characters, such as Underworld, we
yes.
were talking about. Granted, you know, maybe you need to have a girl that's in between a war between vampires and werewolves
or Resident Evil.
Exactly.
You know, that stars a female. Occasionally she's had male counterparts, but sometimes she's also had female counterparts.
Exactly.
I mean, Mila Jovovich, granted, she herself is freaking awesome.
She's great, yeah.
But it's not just, it's not Mila that brings them in. It's the fact that the Resident Evil games are the Resident Evil movies are really fun, and they're like, they might not be masterpieces, and they might not be written like masterpieces, but they're written fun, and they're written to reference the game, and they're, you know, they're just really I don't know, they're really well done female hero.
I think, you know,
strong, and
I think the thing that Resident Evil has going for it, the whole franchise, is the fact that there aren't a lot of good video game movies anyway.
That's true.
So,
yeah,
know,
it is
they,
kind
it
of
looks
on
really
the top
good
there.
In comparison. But yeah, I think Mila Jovovich, we've talked, you know, she's been one of these strong women who's played superheroes before, and she's very good at it. And I think, you know, we were also talking about Luc Besson not too long ago. We watched Nikita. known as La Femme Nikita in America the other day. And, you know, I was thinking about how the fact that Luc Besson is very good at championing, like, strong women characters.
Yeah,
you know,
well, it's funny. We've talked about, like, you know, Joss Whedon and James Cameron and how they, you know, they really have these great female roles. It's funny, though, because Luc Besson actually focuses a lot on the femininity.
Yes, he does.
More so than you know, like James Cameron, who it's just, hey, this girl happens to be the best actress to play this role, or the best person to play this role, even though it wasn't necessarily written for a female, you know?
Yeah, I think Luc Besson is really, really interesting. And I think Nikita, any ladies out there who want to see a really interesting female, strong female character should watch that movie. You know, Point of No Return was a remake, which is good, and it's funny. It's Point
almost
of No Return is almost
shot.
Shot for shot the same, but at the same time, it's almost like watching that Psycho remake
into
the original.
Totally.
I mean, the original is just far better. And you know, it's a really complicated, conflicted character, but it's not like she doesn't get sexualized. You
no,
know,
not
they,
at all.
They treat her with the same sort of respect they would treat Jason Bourne or James Bond or any kind of male secret agent.
It's funny you think that you mentioned Jason Bourne, because that's actually exactly what I was thinking when we were watching the movie. I was thinking how it felt very very Bourne Identity because, like you said, there was no sexualizing of her. It was her emotional state. And it was, you know, her power and stuff, but it wasn't about how, you know, she was just a sex object.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. And then even, you know, you look at The Fifth Element, which Luc Besson also made too, where, you know, they have Mila Jovovich, of course, playing Lilu, and she's dressed very, very provocatively, but at the same time, the character really isn't sexualized.
No, and the funny thing is that the whole reason that she's dressed like that is because those were the bandages.
Yeah.
You know, those were the medical bandages that were placed over her, you know, as they were, I don't know, remaking her, essentially. And then the other outfits were kind of wacky, cute, sort of sexy, but mostly sexy because she just has a sexy body.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's a great character, too, because, you know, not only does she help save Bruce Willis,
and she's the strongest thing in the universe.
In the universe. Exactly, exactly. And, you know, Besson has just been very good at this. Of course, he also made The Messenger with Mila Jovovich about Joan of Arc. That's a pretty powerful woman.
Well, actually, going back to Nikita, Nikita was such a strong female character and just such a strong, well-made movie. And Point of No Return was, you know, at least garnered, you know, some more popularity for the character.
Yeah.
They were able to then make a TV show, La Femme Nikita, which then went on for years.
Yes.
You know? Also, some other shows that were very profitable with female superheroes, Alias.
Yes, very much so.
Buffy, as we mentioned before.
Uh-huh.
You know, these aren't just because, you
Xena
know,
Warrior Princess?
Exactly, exactly. These aren't popular just because there was nothing else out at the time. And it's not that the female character held anything back from it, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's just one of those things that when something's well-written and well-created, people will want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, people like to cite, like I said, Elektra, Catwoman, of why these movies aren't profitable. Those were, like, two of the worst movies ever made.
Yeah.
Like, they're literally... I don't think the guy who directed Catwoman has directed anything since Catwoman.
I can't imagine why.
And Elektra is just, like I said, worse than Daredevil, and very little's worse than Daredevil.
That's true. But actually, we're going to take our first quick break. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Two people who really get upset about Smallville. Geek World. Bumpin' Thursdays at noon.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, superhosts, Anime, and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Today, it's Lady Geek.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com. And if you email us with the wackiest, craziest, geeky thing that you've ever done, or, you know, a really wacky, awesome, made-up story, then you could win tickets to this year's Phoenix Comic Con at the Phoenix Convention Center at the end of this month, Memorial Day weekend.
That's so cool. I'm so excited to get there. It's going to be so freaking awesome. But
yeah.
You know what?
We'll have to make sure that we can get tickets to the James Marsters concert.
Yes. Oh, man. That's so
awesome.
Cool. That's so cool. As long as he says effulgent at some
God.
Point, I'm there.
Oh, he better have a song that's
exactly.
called effulgent.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I was just thinking, every time I hear that our little promo there, we just never get upset at Smallville anymore. I think one of the cool things about Smallville I was just thinking about is the fact that not only do they have some of the most attractive of female characters out there, which I'm a fan of, but they're actually some of the stronger, better written, better acted female characters out there, too.
You know, you're right. We actually, when we got got to talk to Allison Mack, you know, it was really nice because her character has been such an integral part of the Smallville universe, and actually became so much a part of the universe, and Smallville was so popular that Chloe became a part of Superman lore.
Yes.
Like, this is a character that was created for this CW show, or WB, whatever it was.
It was
at the
time. WB at the time, yeah.
This WB show that became such an integral part of Superboy lore, essentially, that all of a sudden Chloe becomes part of the Superman universe. Like, that really says something about just a female character, a female, you know, someone who, by the way, someone who I do not consider a sidekick. Because the thing is that even though she, you know, she doesn't have superpowers, and even though, you know, Superman kind of kept her to the side for a while, or Clark kept her to the side of what, you know, of his superpowers, she was always the one that was kind of starting things. She was the one that was like, I've got this wall of weird. I'm smart. I see that there's something weird here, and something should be done about it. Little was she to know that her friend had superpowers and could actually deal with it.
Well, you know, a lot of people originally in Smallville thought Chloe was going to end up being Lois Lane.
Mm-hmm.
She was sort of Lois Lane 1.0, and Lois Lane is obviously Lois Lane. She ends up being her cousin.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, though. You bring up a really good point, the fact that, you know, some female characters can really transcend from one place and become canon in a superhero's kind of mythology. And another example of that is Harley Quinn.
Yes.
For the Joker. I was actually shocked to find this out because I grew up on Batman the Animated Series. I loved it. I saw every episode. And I was so familiar with Harley Quinn, but she didn't exist before Batman. In the animated mm-hmm. series, she was created for the show.
Yeah,
and she's such a huge character. I mean, Kevin Smith named his daughter after Harley Quinn, and she's such a gigantic DC character. But you know, she came from the animated series and then went into the comic books after that. And that's just another example of the fact that there are these really powerful female characters out there that people do want to see more from.
Well, and it largely, you know, and sometimes it has to do with the effect that they have on the hero or the villain. You know, the effect that Chloe. The character of Chloe had on Clark Kent in Smallville really, you know, affected people, really affected Superman fans, you know,
yeah.
Just as Harley Quinn and her effect on the Joker and the new dynamic that gave the Joker really touched a chord with people. And so much so that when you go around Comic-Con, there's just tons
yes.
of Harley Quinns walking around.
Well, you know, Harley Quinn's really interesting because in some ways she's not a good role model. You know, she sort of, you know, changed herself to be with the Joker. But in other ways,
not really, not too much though.
But well, her whole thing was she was a psychiatrist who then became kind of psychotically obsessed with the Joker, and he kind of his personality sort of won her over, and she kind of became Harley Quinn from there.
I kind of was more under the impression though that she was sort of psychotic to begin
yeah,
with. You
well,
know,
the,
it's like she was psychotic and was just able to transfer that. You know, it's kind of different than a sane person that
yeah.
just you know drops somebody like a character that's supposed to be sane, like Bella from Twilight, where
yeah.
she's willing to drop everything about herself and hate everything about
yeah.
herself
well,
in order to become like her man.
We're going to definitely talk more about her, too, because she's a really, really bad role model. But I think the thing about Harley Quinn is she might have started like that, but, you know, what's really interesting about the character is, you know, obviously it's her charisma and how crazy she is, because she's
yeah.
basically exactly as crazy as the Joker. But also, you know, the Joker, you know, other than Batman, is very good at killing people, getting people out of the way. He even tied Harley Quinn up to a rocket
yeah.
in the animated series and shot her off into space, but she always comes back, you know, she always comes back. He can't get rid of her.
Yeah.
It just shows that, like,
she's
you know,
determined.
She's determined and she knows what she wants, and she's also, I mean, she can go toe-to-toe with the Joker, not exactly in the same sort of way that Batman would. But...
Well, and I also see her relationship with him as, you know, the thing about her is that mental games are her thing. You know, she was a psychiatrist, and so she knows how to mess with people's heads. The thing
yeah.
is that the Joker, his brain is so screwed up to begin with. He's so completely psychotic that she can't exactly mess with him.
Yeah,
she can't exactly get into his head, because once you get in there, you can't really get out. It's all swirls and crazies,
yeah.
you know? And so he makes this kind of awesome toy for her because he becomes this thing that she can't exactly fix, but she can't mess with him the way she can mess with other people, and that's intriguing. It's kind of like in True Blood, how, you know, Sookie can't hear the vampires, and so that makes the vampires more intriguing to her.
Yeah, you know, I think Sookie is another really good example, and we'll talk about True Blood and about her character too, because I think she's actually a very, very positive female role model.
Incredibly.
And you know, and her brother we often talk about too, Jason Stackhouse, because we've kind of determined that he actually plays the more kind of typical female role.
He's actually, pardon my language, but he is the town slut.
Completely.
You know, he's the one, you know, he goes around sleeping with anything and, and he doesn't think about what he's doing and he doesn't think about the consequences and he's always getting himself into situations where his little sister has to get him out. And
there's all kinds of fiction throughout, you know, there's this female character that tends to be, which, you know, she's, you know, sometimes blonde, sometimes a dit, sometimes easy like that. Mm-hmm. And he really encapsulates that character. And for it to be a male, I think, you know, not only is really progressive, you know, thanks Alan Ball and the person who wrote the True Blood
series. Charlene Harris,
thank you. But, you know,
Southern
it also...
The Southern Vampire Adventures is what it is.
But it also, you know, just makes, you know, the Sookie character even more, you know, interesting in the fact that, you know, she's the positive side of this, you know, brother-sister relationship.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the great thing is that the Jason character, he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good guy, but, you know, he's the hooker with a heart of gold.
He's a ditz.
Yeah, and he gets manipulated by women, you know, just like women, you know, in so many of these things get manipulated by men. I mean, he got manipulated into joining essentially a religious cult.
Yeah.
Because he's so much of what is typically portrayed as the female character.
Yeah, you know, Alan Ball's really cool because, you know, Alan Ball obviously was 6 feet under in some of his other work. He's, you know, tackles a lot of issues. You know, sometimes a lot of it has to do with the way homosexuals are treated in America and the world. And he's done a really good job in True Blood of taking kind of a different route, kind of taking sexism in an opposite direction or making sexism really not an issue because it's more about like a race type thing, you know.
Well, it's very much the way that both you know, homosexuality as well as race is treated. It's just those inner social conflicts as portrayed by humans versus vampires, rather than one race versus another or gay versus straight or anything like that.
Yeah.
It takes a fictionalized, you know, monster of sorts, but monster that they show to not actually be monstrous, you know, that can be monstrous, but no more so than like the religious cult of humans, you know, that both sides have their monsters.
Totally.
And so, like we were saying, the Jason character becomes the typical female character, and it's funny because most people don't even see it as such. They see it as, oh, look at him, he gets to sleep with all the girls,
you know? Exactly.
And when you really, really look at it and analyze it, you got Sookie, who's very much more of the hero. I mean, she's the one who goes to the vampire bar and says, you know, you do this for me. And then, you know, they mess with her because they're vampires and they can. But she still goes in and goes, you know, she's still willing to make those steps to go in into the scary places. And she's kind of fearless, whereas, you know, her brother is just kind of dopey and manipulated. And, yeah, it's
completely,
really,
completely.
Really well done.
Completely. You know, I think that... you know, to kind of go along with sexism, you know, I'm sure you've heard the whole adage, you know, bros before hoes, that a lot of guys have used. And that's kind of, you know, when guys are, especially when they're teens or in their early 20s and we all like to group together. And then, you know, one of us gets a girlfriend, all of a sudden we're not around anymore. And all the guys get all kind of jealous. They're all kind of upset that their guy friend is no longer
there.
They
get all weepy.
Well, and they really do. And it's funny because I've had this happen to me because, you know, I was a total geek, obviously.
Yeah.
Still am, you know, through high school, and I finally got a girlfriend. All of a sudden, you know, I stopped hanging out with my guy friends, and I had some guy friends who were super, like, angry at me, like, super upset. And I was, you know, to me, I was like, guys, I finally get to, you know, be with a girl. I could possibly mess around here a little bit. Like, what's the big deal?
I might see what a real boob looks
like. Exactly. And it was the first time where, to me, I'm like, I don't understand why there's a problem here. Like, it never made sense to me why they'd be upset at me. And I really kind of started understanding that whole, like, that some guys really feel that way. And I think I pinpointed through my research where this all started.
Ooh, tell me about it.
Where the whole bros before hoes thing started. It's all an angry, it's a lot of anger.
Okay.
Is where this came from. And it's steeped ever since World War II. Now, people are going to be like, oh, I know. It's because the whole, like, you know.
It's the Germans.
No, it's not the Germans. Oh. That's silly. Of course not. Duh. Ugh, I can't believe you would say that. No. I think a lot of people would be like, oh, it's because, you know, women started working and then it, you know, destroyed, like, you know, the household or whatever. No, it has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. What I have to talk about is the fact that after World War II,
mm-hmm.
comic books, you know, superheroes started going down, right? The superheroes were not as popular anymore. And, you know, Stan Lee was not a big fan of sidekicks. I didn't know if you know this. So
I can see that.
So in 1948, he brought about Sun Girl, and she got kind of her own book. And then what happened here is very interesting. This is where I think this started. Sun Girl ended up replacing Toro as the Human Torch's sort of, you know, the Human Toro, the Human Torch's sidekick. She replaced him as like a partner to Human Torch, okay? Not only that, but Bucky, Captain America's sidekick, he also got replaced by Golden Girl. So all of a sudden, there's all these sidekicks who are out of work because of these females. And I think that's where all this sexism of Bros Before Hoes started. It's the sidekicks.
You know,
the angry, angry sidekicks.
You know, it's funny because that kind of parallels life in that, you know, the sidekicks just get all upset at the women for taking their jobs
yep.
rather than doing what Nightwing did and go off on their own and say, hey, I can be a hero too. You know, it's just these loser sidekicks that don't realize that they could go out and do something on their own. They just go, oh, woman took my job.
I mean, really, it's sort of like, does that mean that, you know, the whole Yoko Ono thing, it's just that, you know, the other Beatles were
felt
just like sidekicks?
Sidekicks?
Yeah,
oh,
they just feel like
I don't think any. I think you might get some angry emails for that.
Is that what's going on here?
I think you might get some very angry.
Not so much.
You can't talk about the Beatles like that.
I can talk about the Beatles however I want. You know what? It doesn't matter.
Because this is Geek World.
Because they're the most famous band ever. So really, whatever I'm going to say doesn't mean anything. So, you know.
Yeah.
But I believe that's where it all started. Isn't that amazing? I know there's always a pinpoint. There's one point in time. I've watched Doctor Who enough. There's one point in time where things change. I believe that was the moment.
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, Rosie the Riveter, you know, portrayed this strong image of women. And like you said, in World War II, it was about women going into the workforce, and so it created this this scenario where there were a lot of women who really started to want heroes.
Totally.
You know? And there were women you know, who worked for the military, and they wanted heroes too. And so it makes sense that there would have been all this shift to add more females to the stuff. But again, that's what it was a lot of the time. It was making a female counterpart for this guy because, hey, if guys will buy it, then women will probably buy it too, you know? And
totally.
And rather than actually giving a character her own personality, her own superpowers, her own, you know, her own unique being.
Yeah, which, you know, really, it was, you know, it was Wonder Woman that really kind of helped start that, at least in TV-wise. And from Wonder Woman, you know, started moving things like Charlie's Angels, and then the 90s became kind of big with that.
Charlie's Angels, another female-centered, you know, kick-butt detective show that lasted for years, starring a bunch of females kicking butt.
Exactly, exactly. And who doesn't like to see that, really?
It's true. They didn't need to, you know, granted, you know, if you've watched just the opening for it, there is definitely some stuff of bikinis and stuff like that, but they didn't have to wear bikinis. They could go in turtlenecks and, you know, they could go in a gigantic ski coat and puffy pants, and it was still awesome to watch them fight.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that most female heroes, other than maybe Buffy and Wonder Woman, a lot of them use their feminine wiles in order to get the guy, you know, to kind of be not think there's a threat there.
Yeah.
Then they turn the tables on him, you know, and that's sort of what Alias was all about in a lot of the episodes of Alias. And you know, there's only a few female characters, like I said, like Wonder Woman, Buffy, that kind of straight out are just like these iconic symbols of strength.
Well, but even Buffy isn't on the offset, because on the offset, when you just look at her, she's a small blonde girl.
Yes.
You know, that's one of the other interesting things, that that even if there are these female characters where strength is their power, where actual physical strength is their power, it generally is still hidden underneath. It's this little unassuming blonde girl, you know, that, oh my God, all of a sudden she can kick Superman's butt, you know. there's very few like She-Hulks or, you know, characters that just on the offset, that right from the start, that you can see that they're muscly, that they're powerful, that they're strong, because there is still that feel of need for the femininity of it, or there's that need to make it that it's the unassuming girl, you know, rather than just having some girl that's strong enough. Xena is actually the opposite of that. Xena is one of the few where you know, it was she wasn't huge, but Lucy Lawless is
she's
tall.
Big, yeah, she's like 5'10". You know,
she's tall. She's athletic looking, and she looked like she could kick a lot of butt. I mean, plus they had some shorter actors to make her look even bigger. But that's the point, that she was a warrior princess, just like Wonder Woman is an Amazon warrior.
Yeah.
Amazon warrior princess.
Yeah, exactly.
and you know, but if you're not an Amazon warrior princess, you know, or a warrior princess, then you don't get to be big.
Are you not an Amazon warrior princess? Princess, would you like to be?
Too bad.
Too bad. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's funny when you look back at Wonder Woman, you see kind of the different incarnations of how she looks, and you know, sometimes she'll be kind of daintier looking, sometimes she'll be very muscular, mm-hmm. and very large, and you know, there's always kind of a new take on her. But she's definitely sort of that, not sort of, she is the symbol of female strength,
mm-hmm.
When it comes to physical strength. And it's funny because I know that there was a time in the 70s when secret agents were really in, where they kind of stripped Wonder Woman of all of her powers,
yeah.
and made her a secret agent. And I know, DC got so many letters from women who were really upset.
Yeah.
That, you know, they had this one female superhero
light, yeah.
that was like, you know, that if nothing else, like, this wouldn't change, that she was the one strong.
That she was always going to be as strong as Superman.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, no, now she's just a regular human. It's like, thanks for ruining that for us.
Yeah.
And you know, they saw pretty quickly that, you know, people were not on board for that. People did not want that. But
now, Wonder Woman herself is actually a really interesting character, unless there's something else that you wanted to bring up. I'd actually like to talk a little bit about Wonder
Let's
Woman.
Let's do it.
So one of the great things about Wonder Woman is that she was at least in part created by a female. She's created, you know, she was a collaborative effort, but she was created at least in part by a female.
Yes.
And even more so, her lasso was very much created by a female.
Totally.
Is that why
it's made out of gold? Is that women just like jewelry?
Yes,
no. Finally, I got to be sexist.
Okay. So the woman who created or helped co-created Wonder Woman was Elizabeth or Sadie Holloway Marsden, and she co-created Wonder Woman with her husband, and she was a psychologist. And she's actually not just a psychologist, but she and her husband helped to create the lie detector test.
So funny.
Which is, you know, what they kind of base their truth lasso on.
Yes.
But the funny thing is that this is a woman who went out and got, you know, when women weren't getting degrees at all.
Yeah.
This woman had three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they wouldn't let her into Harvard because she was a woman.
Yeah.
Purely because she was a woman. She said that when she was taking like the bar exam, or you know, taking some exam, that she was her and she was sitting outside after she had finished it, like in no time flat, waiting for her husband and some other Harvard men who hadn't finished yet. It's like, oh, you silly men, you can't even finish this test in a reasonable amount of time. You know, and they wouldn't let me into Harvard, really? You know, this is a woman who, when she went and said to her dad, I want to go to college, give me some money, can you help me fund it, her dad goes, no, as long as I can afford to keep you and aprons, you'll be in the kitchen with your mother.
That's so messed up,
like,
isn't it?
And so what did she do? She went, well, fine, I'll make the money myself. And she went out peddling comic books in order to make the money to pay for her tuition. And she did. And she went to, I think, Boston University and graduated. And like I said, had three degrees and was a psychologist and created Wonder Woman with her husband. And like, it's just...
I like that you say peddling comic books. All I started thinking about was, you know, the show Weeds? What if instead of selling, you know, marijuana, she sold comic books to people?
I like to imagine it like a, you know, the people that like walk around with like the carts with like ice cream in them?
Uh-huh.
I imagine a cart like that, except filled with comic books.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, like people are slinging rock on the streets, you know, people like, you know, selling drugs and cocaine. I like to imagine, you know, at a park and the handshake, you know, money, the kind of handshake money transfer, and then somebody like gives them the comic book. And I like to think of it like that.
I can
it's
see
much
that.
Better. It's like the movie Clockers. You ever see that?
I don't know.
Clockers is messed up. Good spectacle movie.
Is that a gang one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I totally saw it.
Totally messed up. It's actually one of the few movies I saw that really, I saw in the theater as a kid that really messed with my head.
I think I rented it, but I intended to rent Hackers. I'm actually not joking.
I'm not actually joking there.
I couldn't remember what the name of the movie that I wanted was.
Yeah.
And I saw something with Urs, and somebody told me that it was like a really like well done movie or really not really good. Like, yeah. Like, and I was like, eh, whatever. I don't remember what I was getting. So this one has Urs.
It's like, I can't remember who it was, but I remember I read someone had tried to rent the 28 Days movie with Sandra Bullock and got 28 Days Later.
Oh, that's funny.
And halfway through, we're wondering where Sandra Bullock was and why there are so many zombies.
Oh, that's funny. That's awesome.
These things happen. You know, I'd like to say real quick, since you brought it up a while ago, that I did go see Bridget Jones's Diary. You know how I went to see that? I actually was going to meet a girl for a date to go see it. She totally stood me up. And I was
You still went?
I was like, you know what?
That's awesome.
Forget this. I'm watching this movie.
To go.
And I really liked it. And it's funny. You know what's really funny about the Hollywood standard is the fact that, you know, a girl starts off in Hollywood and then she gets skinnier as more famous she gets.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was Renee Zellweger had to gain weight to play Bridget Jones. And she's never looked better than as Bridget Jones. Like, when she was, like, 10, 15 pounds or whatever over what she should have been, like, she was so much better looking than any other time in her career where she's been this weird sort of sickly, skinny person.
We
always talk about that kind of thing, like, you know, we don't want to see a bunch of, you know, fat women running around, but at the same time, it's so weird how Hollywood just like continues to make women skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. Like, that's some sort of virtue.
Well, it's kind of becoming this really weird thing where Hollywood is trying to make women look like little boys.
Yeah.
Which is really creepy, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it comes off as this thing where women shouldn't be proud of having womanly features. You know, women should get so skinny that they no longer have breasts. Women should get so skinny that you can no longer tell they have hips. You know, it's like strip off everything that makes her womanly so that maybe then she can be powerful.
But you know, it's funny, it's such a double standard because you think about the movie King Arthur that they made a few years ago with Keira Knightley on the cover, which was, you know, right after Pirates of the Caribbean, and they took the picture of her, you know, and Keira Knightley's incredibly skinny, and they augmented her breasts in Photoshop for the cover.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she went from, you know, like an A cup to like a D cup. And so it's like they still wanted this insanely skinny girl, but at the same time they needed to, like, you know, augment her in that way.
Of course, let's think of Brad Pitt and what was it, Troy?
Yeah.
Where they wanted Brad Pitt because he's so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not beefy enough, so they freaking digitally gave him legs.
Digitally
enhanced his legs. Like,
they call this chicken legs.
I mean, it was one thing when they digitally enhanced Angelina Jolie, which, I mean, the fact that you ever have to digitally enhance Angelina Jolie for Tomb Raider, that they had to digitally enhance her at all is just ridiculous.
Did they for Tomb
Raider?
They
did, yeah. They added a little bit of padding everywhere.
I thought she was literally wearing padding. I think they actually did it through CGI.
I think the legs again. I think it was one of those things where they made the legs thicker. I could be wrong. I might be remembering it wrong, and it might have just been for promotional pictures to make it look more like the make it look more like the video game. But I believe I remember it. But it could have just been padding.
You know, it's really funny too. I'm a big fan of Angelina Jolie, mostly because she was naked all through the beginning of her career, and when she was doing
even with Ilias Kotia,
exactly when she was doing Gia, she actually. Was the correct
proportion
bust size for Lara Croft, but of course she got much skinnier so she could do all the action stuff.
Uh-huh.
And you know, when women have actual real breasts, they get, you know, they it's
a little
and you know, and they lose it, and it's so funny that, you know, they cast somebody who actually was
she was properly proportioned for the look of the part.
Anyway, we want to talk a little bit about video games.
Well, actually,
right?
We don't even have time to talk about video games right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, but we are going to take another quick break. But when we get back from this break, do you know what's going to happen then?
Video games?
Exactly.
Oof.
So get ready for us to talk about, you know, some Lara Croft, some Resident Evil,
a little Metroid action going on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we will be back with you in just a moment.